When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is the Comedy Album Book Club. Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt. Jason, our regular host, isn't able to make it. Today we are covering Jim Gaffigan's Mr. Universe. So as always, we recommend you stop the podcast, listen to the album, come on back, and then we'll talk about the show.
And we are joined by Alicia Carrick, Liz Myers, Sunny B, and Miguel Martin Garcia. So Alicia is our featured panelist, just because she was the first person I asked. So Alicia is new to comedy, recently performed stand-up at Speakeasy at the 120 Diner. Stand-up and improv comedian, and is enjoying new opportunities performing comedy. Yeah. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Liz Myers recently performed at the Ha Ha Glug Glug at Henderson's Brewery and Winona Lodge's Open Mic, an improv and stand-up comedy student at Second City, and you're just exploring new comedy opportunities, right?
My life is a new comedy opportunity.
Excellent. Sunny, you are a real estate agent trying to tell some jokes, new to the comedy scene as well. You have about a year's experience, is that right?
The truth is, I'm just looking to see if anyone's looking to buy or sell a house right now. No, I'm
kidding, I'm kidding. Lean back in your chair.
Oh, right. I'm
excited. Now you're also studying at Second City as well?
You got it.
Excellent, okay. And Miguel, you did your first stand-up set in Melbourne before signing up for and it didn't bomb, so you signed up for stand-up at Second City. You're taking your show on the road to Paris.
That's correct, yes. I got promoted, I got transferred, and there is a large English stand-up scene in Paris. So we're going for it.
Look at Paris.
So it's going to be like that scene in The Magnificent Mrs. Maisel where she's like standing in front of the drag performers and doing stand-up in English, and some American in the audience is translating it into French for them.
Yeah.
Reasons. Okay. So you're all new to comedy. I guess we'll sort of like go around. What drew you to performing stand-up? I guess, Alicia, I'll start with you.
It was something that I always wanted to try. It was an attractive art form to me. I think I have an Irish mum and an English teacher dad. And I feel like just language was always... a source of humor, but also you can be smart about it, right? And that's what we like about comedy. It's subversive and all those things. And not that I'm at that level yet, but I think it's an interesting way. Landline.
Sorry.
Oh, that's great.
Landline.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
Irish mother. English
sure, I was just saying.
Subversion.
Yeah, but I mean, I, as a person, liked to talk in front of groups. I don't know. It was just I like to speak in front of people. But I also like comedy. It's just, it was something I wanted to try, thought it looked like a good time. It was always a goal. And then I eventually was nearing now, or actually it was just this last January, right? But then I'm like, oh, I've never done that. And I'm not going to be in Toronto maybe forever. Well, maybe I will be, I don't know. But I feel as though I'm in the right place to explore this thing that I have wanted to try. And I finally just, you know, bit the bullet and did it. And I find that I'm enjoying it. And it makes me happy to be doing it. So I just, you want to lean into that and keep going.
Excellent.
What's up?
Now, Liz, how about you? What drew you to doing stand-up?
Well, like Alicia, I've always been a show-off. I've always been very comfortable talking in front of groups of people. I remember when I was a little kid, I was in French immersion and I learned the word for seal in French.
I was four or five.
I really wanted to tell everyone, and there was this big family dinner at, and you know this is classy, Eastside Mario's. and none of the grown-ups were paying attention to me because they were all catching up. They were all from like out of province or whatever. And I was getting really frustrated that no one would look at me and listen to me because I had this really cool thing that I wanted to tell everyone. And so I stood up on my chair, which was at the end of the table, luckily enough. And I yelled from on top of my chair, "Hey!" And then they all looked at me. "Does anybody know what seal is in French?" And then I saw the looks on their faces just fall. Like, I specifically remember my dad being like, because they all knew what was coming. And after I told them, because it's fuck.
For the non-Canadians.
For the non-French-Canadians, non-Canadians. Fuck is seal in French. And so I yelled fuck out.
So we also learned cock at the same time. So it was like,
yes,
cock.
Cock and fuck. So I yelled that out, and the entire restaurant turned towards my family's table, and I felt no shame. I felt no shame. And then I was trying to figure out what class I should take at Second City, because I wanted to spend more money. And friend Emmy was like, you know, I feel like you'd be really good at stand-up. Most of your improv is just basically giant long monologues anyways. And I was like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Fuck it.
Seal it.
Fuck it. Yeah, seal it. Seal the deal.
Yeah. And Sunny?
Let's see, how does this story go? I feel I was always the person that wanted to make class fun, whether it be middle school, high school, just school in general. And if the teacher wasn't fun, I wanted to make it fun however I could, call it a class clown or whatnot. And then eventually that attitude kind of stuck with me throughout work. And I had a lot of colleagues kind of say, hey, you should do stand-up. And then like one person said it, and then eventually I would kind of meet somebody else, they would say it. And then I really wanted to get into the idea of public speaking. Like that was somewhat of a fear. How do I speak in front of a crowd? How do I speak to people? Yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know what? This might be the best of both worlds. Or A, I gained the confidence to speak in front of a large crowd when I meant to, or supposed to, not under the influence.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, kind of get creative with the writing aspect.
Miguel, so first time doing stand-up was in Melbourne,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So what drew you to that? Maybe tell us a bit about Melbourne.
I've always been a comedian. I used to use it as a bit of a wall before I came out because I was afraid that if anybody ever found out that I was gay, that they would hate me. But hey, nobody hates the funny guy. But then after that, after I came out, it turns out that I'm actually just funny. So I've had friends pushing me to do stand-up for a while. And while I was there earlier this year, I figured, hey, the worst that can happen is, you know, I completely bomb and these people call up border security and they have me arrested. But the next worst thing is that, you know, I never see these people again. But then it went quite well. And I decided to do Second City courses here. And a hobby is born.
Now, how has the Second City experience been for all of us? You're all except for, you know, except for Lisa, you're not taking the stand-up yet. Right. You've taken the improv courses, and, you know, I've been taking the improv as well. But how is Second City being to you guys as for helping you with your craft?
I think it's been really good because, especially like the second level stand-up where we have to come up with a new set every week mm-hmm. based on a topic, like you're forced to be funny. And
you're forced to write.
Yes. You're forced to write. You're forced to write well.
Yeah. You're thinking about it.
So
you're being judged.
So it, like, it's not just helping you to learn how to tell a story. It's learning, teaching you how to tell a story quickly.
Well, comedy, there's the analogy that, or not analogy, but the saying, all musicians want to be comedians, all comedians want to be musicians. And it's sort of, to a degree, it's sort of like, you know, it's comedy, writing jokes is like writing a song. And that you have to, like, there's craftsmanship to it, there's an awareness to it. So it's challenging you to sit down and compose, essentially, from the sounds of that class.
Yeah, it's like writing, but you're learning a different kind of writing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's completely different, yeah. It's really, I'm really sorry, Second City. I'm really sorry. I'm probably not going to take level 3. I'm poor. but no, level 1, like, it was super focused on writing and actually getting them out, like getting your premises out and getting those ideas just really flowing and just putting those ideas on paper and really crafting. Whereas the second level was great. It forced me to be accountable and to actually learn how to memorize shit without writing stuff. So, like, actually just being able to have the jokes in your mind without writing them all out. And that's something that I was doing from the beginning. And real fucking difficult. God damn, I don't know what I was doing. I was shooting myself in the foot. But the most valuable thing through Second City actually was just meeting all of the people that I've met and connecting with this giant, amazing, supportive, incredibly supportive community. It's just like you have, like, this amazing cheering section of friends behind you no matter what you do, and they're so great. And it's just, I mean, yeah, is it worth $600? Yeah, it's probably $600, okay.
All right, well, just to sort of introduce the album that we covered. So James Christopher Gaffigan was born July 7th, 1966 to Marcia and Michael Gaffigan in Elgin, Illinois. The youngest of six siblings, Jim decided at an early in life, at the age of 5, he wanted to be an actress. Despite this, his early inclination towards performing, his father, who was a banker, pushed him to pursue a more stable career. Regardless of his father's wishes, he chased a career in comedy inspired by Saturday Night Live, Seinfeld, Bill Murray, Richard Pryor, and David Letterman, for whom he would regularly audition over the course of 6 years living in New York, before finally landing a spot to promote his sitcom in 2015. His career started in earnest in 1991, mentored by Dave Attell, whom he would later base a character on in his 2015 sitcom. Jim's material was largely sarcastically observational, relating to his personal experiences growing up in a large Catholic family, his weight, and his relationships. He early on developed a sort of squeaky-voiced, self-deprecating audience through-line. This voice, often sending up his own bits, was done to disarm hecklers before they had a chance to turn on him during his early stand-up days. He recorded his first special in 2005 for Comedy Central, which became his sixth album, Beyond the Pale. Mr. Universe, which reached number 53 on the Billboard comedy charts, was his third special, and was released independently in 2012 with a $1 of every album sale going to the Bob Woodruff Foundation, helping veterans and their families. This came at a time when other big name comedians were experimenting with self-publishing. Gaffigan at the time was one of the top 10 grossing comedians in America and felt he could do the same. Now, he must have been onto something because the album later went on to be nominated for the Best Comedy Album in the Grammys, competing against Kathy Griffin, Margaret Cho, Lewis Black, Tenacious D, and Jimmy Fallon, who brought home the award. Gaffigan has gone on to release 11 albums and 5 specials. His career has been varied beyond stand-up, including acting work with appearances on Law & Order, My Boys, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, Drunk Parents, upcoming film Tesla, Flight of the Conchords, and many more. He actually has over 103 acting credits, not to mention his writing, producing, and directing credits, including the series that he and his wife wrote called Pale Force, where he, a cartoon, Jim Gaffigan and Conan O'Brien would fight evil. He's even opened for Pope Francis during his visit to America. He did stand up in Philadelphia for 1 million people waiting for the Pope. That happened the same year that his self-named sitcom, The Jim Gaffigan Show, started. He starred next to Ashley Williams, who played his wife Jeannie, Michael Ian Black, who played her friend Daniel, and Adam Goldberg, played a character named Dave, who is clearly based on Dave Attell. Many of the New York comedy fixtures and comedy world made appearances in this show, often eating at regular comedy hotspots and hangouts. Even John Mulaney, who is now arguably one of the biggest names in comedy, played himself on a regular basis, a fictionalized version of himself, where he was sort of a nemesis to Jim's character, sort of Newman-esque in a way, where Jim would make fun of things like, for example, Jim's show was on, I believe it was True TV, and John Mulaney's character got a deal for a series on True TV, and he's like, oh, what kind of loser would do that? And it's like, again, self-deprecatory, which is sort of his bread and butter. The sitcom ended after two seasons on a creative high. The series was co-wrote by Jim's wife, Jeannie, dealt with some very dark subjects and often played with the entire concept of Jim as family-friendly, touching on some very sensitive topics. Any conversation about Jim is not complete without discussing his wife, Jeannie, and who is also his writing partner. Jeannie Gaffigan, Nee Noth, is an actress, comedian, writer, and producer in her own right. Met Jim soon after moving to New York to pursue her acting career. They performed sketch comedy together and started dating. She co-wrote all five of his specials and was co-writer and producer of The Jim Gaffigan Show.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you watch any of her specials, any of his specials, there's a writing credit for her on all of them. I mean, which is fair because, you know, the material is 50% about her half the time.
Yeah. I mean, it is, or at least what she made.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the entire opening bit.
Her.
Yeah. All about their family. Now, while it was airing, she and Jim would often have hilarious back and forth interactions on social media where they're eating chips and just taunting one another. Sometimes when he was touring, maybe Skyping, it was bizarre. She won a Christopher Award for her episode, My Friend the Priest, and directed the season finale. She's since gone on to write a book called When Life Gives You Pears, recounting her experience surviving a brain tumor that was found and removed in 2017 that was the size of a pear.
Oh, Jesus.
So,
God dang, that woman's got a big brain.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that, you know, what the human body can do and its resilience.
Yeah, holy, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Alicia,
I was thinking the same thing, don't worry.
You chose this album. What made you think of this one?
It was you.
It was I. I think it's lighthearted in some ways. Would you agree, everybody? Well, yeah, some elements of it, and I
think it's in brevity.
Yeah, and I guess I like the aspect that it's clean. Like that may not be my humor, like whatever. But I think it's, if you're able to write like that, then I think there's something to say about it. Mm-hmm. But listening to it, I think this was probably like the third or fourth time, like it's still funny. It has replayability. But I think I love that little voice that he does where he, and I get that that's the whole, like, you know, the anti-heckler, you're going to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. But that is funny.
But I find that the voice, and you guys can certainly chime in. I find the voice is a nice punch up to every
joke. Yeah,
100%.
So he's able to, like, here's the joke. Mm-hmm. And now here's a little garnish with that joke.
Yeah.
So
right, exactly,
like,
what it is. It's kind of like the pizza with the dipping sauce.
Yeah.
It's like, just in case the pizza doesn't sound or taste good, here's a little extra flavor.
And even if it tastes good, it's going to taste better.
You could say that.
Yeah.
I feel a
it's
lot
heightening.
of
tightening, yes.
I feel a lot of his stuff might not be funny without the acting. Like, he might just say it. Like, let's just say he said it in a normal voice. I don't have an example off the top, but I'll get one eventually. And it's like, he'll say the joke, but the accent makes it funny. But if he just said it without any accent...
It would just be nothing, sort of monotone. Like, you can listen to the whole his thing.
His Schwarzenegger bit, where he said, you know, everyone can do a Schwarzenegger. Why can't he do anyone who actually can say governor or whatever it was?
California.
Why can't Arnold Schwarzenegger do a joke about... Like, why can't Arnold Schwarzenegger do an impression of a person who can say California?
Yeah, but it's... Well done, Matt. Well done. That just brings the whole thing to life.
Yes.
Now,
what was everybody's first experience with Jim Gaffigan? So, again, I'll start with Alicia.
I watched it. I was visiting my parents in Windsor, and we watched it together as a family. And my dad's a big George Carlin fan. A lot of people are, but that's a lot of swearing and whatever. But now, as I think my dad's aged, he finds Jim Gaffigan to be just so... smart without dropping the F-bombs all the time, whatever, because and then he listens to comedians that are like our age now, and my dad being my dad might just be a little more critical, you know,
in a way. It's kind of comedy. Like, especially if you look at his influences being like Richard Pryor, and his mentor was David Tell, who's like known for being foul-mouthed.
It's refreshing.
It's almost like it's a trick.
And that too.
Like he could swear. He swears
absolutely
a couple of times in here, but he doesn't go into it because he's executing a technical feat thing there.
It's like the bare bones comedy. Like sometimes you can get the shock factor out of dropping the F-bomb, whatever it is. Yeah. You know, but I think
if you don't need it.
I think it's a testament to him and just his ability to write, you know? Like looking at his past, you're like, okay.
Yeah, now that you're saying it, like I'm realizing now that there were, I don't think, were there any F-bombs?
No,
what? Yeah. He said bullshit.
Okay, well, bullshit.
Shit.
Bullshit, I do not count as a swear word because
it's one of those, like, in America, they've counted as a swear word.
But it's also actually been a word used in the title of a scientific study. So, like, on bullshit.
Yeah.
So, for me, it's a scientific word now.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, he uses a little bit of blue language, but nothing that I would make, I'd consider the set blue for...
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah. Liz, what was your first experience? Not necessarily with this album, but just Jim Gaffigan in general.
So, I was thinking about this earlier. I do not remember the first time that I ever heard or saw Jim Gaffigan. He's kind of just ever present. He's this ever present ghost of comedy who's still alive. He's like this zombie ghost who's looming over everybody, and he's still goddamn hilarious. I do not remember the first time I ever saw him, but to go back to what Miguel and Alicia were saying, you don't need to be ultra blue to be funny. It's like a technical feat of strength, right? He's like in these comedy Olympics. So how can you deliver a dirty joke without being dirty?
I mean, and he does some really dark material. And this album, not as much as others or just his sitcom.
But it's dark.
Where
it's dirty.
Like there's pedophile jokes and stuff. But it's like it's not crude.
It's
and it's
still.
Like the target is punching the right direction.
Yes, exactly.
But it's like there's dark subject material, but he does it in such a way where it's like almost stealth.
He's punching
off
and
really
punching
witty
down.
Yeah.
He's actually really witty.
Yeah.
Because he can just get away with what he's saying. Even with the episode that we just watched, like he's making fun of people that are overweight. But you know what? Like he takes his shots at them, and then he takes a shot at all the extra fit guys.
But you're a bodybuilder, also, like, he takes it as well balanced in a way that's like,
yeah, he's not saying
deprecating.
Yeah, he's not necessarily saying "ha ha, you're fat." He's making fun.
"Ha ha, I'm sad."
Yeah,
you know, because he's a fat guy. He's a tall, big man.
He's a little pudgy.
Yeah, and he's. I haven't seen him naked.
I believe the word for him is blubber. Sorry.
Blubber. Yes.
But there's still messages behind what he's saying.
100%.
I mean, I love the McDonald's bit. It's all McDonald's, and it's. You know, he comments about him being like your stereotypical white trash guy or something like that. Like, but it's, you know, it's still something all people can relate to.
Yeah,
but
I found
it with, it's garbage.
I'll loop right back around in the McDonald's bit. But what I found about that is it's not really about McDonald's.
No.
That's
no.
The
once
beauty
we're done
of
eating,
it.
We should get something to eat.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Disney.
It's culture.
Yeah, it's a wonderful metaphor for mass media culture and everything we're kind of force fed.
Yeah, it's kind of like a wake up call. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, this is what's going on, guys.
When health is less accepting than McDonald's, it's anyways, we'll loop back around McDonald's, yes. Right, Matt?
Yeah, we will. Perfect. So, where was your first Jim Gaffigan experience?
Yes. So the truth was, it was his commercial to his show, where he just lifts up the thing and he shows his kid, like, oh, which one is it, or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And then I tried, I just didn't like him. I don't know what it was. Sorry, guys.
But no, that's fair. Don't hold us.
Fair enough. The first, I tried to watch one of his specials, and it sucks to say that I don't remember what it was, but I ended up turning it off. Because it was basically like, I get it, you got a lot of kids, and you're not in shape.
And right, it was probably this one.
I don't know. But whatever happened, I didn't watch the whole thing and I wasn't happy. And I think I said that before I walked in here today too. I'm like, I'm not really a fan of this guy. Yeah. However, now that I kind of completed the whole thing, I really enjoyed his creativity. I like this wordplay. I like this wittiness. I like the way he kind of put it in subliminals. There's a lot of stuff that he did there that, like, I don't even know right now, but I just kind of ate it. Like, I was like, oh, give me more. Like, that was good, you know?
Did it help that you weren't watching him?
I was going to add that in. I didn't know if we're going to loop around. But the fact that we just listened and I can visualize what he's saying was a bonus for me. Because then I thought, if I actually saw this, it would be even funnier. But I'm already laughing at the fact that I'm just listening to what you're saying, and I can picture
it. See, he does some really good stage work.
Yeah.
The phone.
Yeah, like,
so good.
But the fact that we didn't watch it, we listened to it, and it was still hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a lot of credit to his writing skills, right?
Yeah.
His
writing ability. There's not much in, like, how many tracks are there? But there's not much in there that is a sight gag. You know, that's dependent on him having this moment.
Visual.
Is that purposeful, though? Because maybe that's his style, then? Because I know a lot of people, you have to see them to laugh at what they're doing, right?
There's 14 tracks.
Yeah.
The longest one is Working Out. McDonald's is the longest one. Mm-hmm. At 10 minutes and 20 seconds,
That's a long time
to talk about McDonald's.
But that bit's probably like five or six smaller bits.
Yeah. All of my McDonald's bits. Now.
But I feel regardless, if you watch it, it's always funny.
It didn't lag. Like, watching it, it didn't, like, feel like, oh, this is dragging. Like, there's some albums that I listen to, even the people I super respect, like, you know, Steve Martin, that...
Too physical for an album.
Well, with him, that's a conscious decision.
I know, but, like...
With him, it's because he's pioneering anti-comedy. That was almost like a fuck you to the listener. So that was a very deliberate choice. But there are other comedians who they just don't think about it.
Right.
They don't realize, I'm recording this for an album.
Yeah.
This isn't going to play well. So I think there's some awareness to his material.
Like, maybe my opinion is coming from the fact that I don't have an improv background. I don't have the kind of stage presence that I would want. I kind of think that what I write, I say it. And maybe it would be better if you just heard it opposed to seeing it. And I think that's what I really liked about it. The fact that I'm still laughing at your jokes. And I'm not there. I'm not watching you. I'm just listening. And I'm laughing.
Yeah,
so it's like, that's a lot of extra effort or talent or however you want to put it.
And that's one of the reasons why we kind of like want to focus on, because like the tradition of the comedy album going back to the 50s and 60s, it kind of makes you focus in on the material in a different way. So that's one of the reasons why we're like, we'll often watch the special as well.
Yeah.
To play them one off the other, like contrast and compare. In this case, it's just there's like no difference. Like there's not it's line for line, beat for beat, and which just speaks to like his capability as a writer, as a joke teller.
Yeah, but even as a performer, because if we back it up, now he doesn't have the actions behind it the way we experience this, but he's still just punch. Because I feel like some people kind of do their actions, and that's kind of like their break. Or their segue into the next thing, you didn't really like.
It was continuous.
We didn't experience that, so it's kind of like he took the right amount of time, even via audio, to get to the next point, to get to the next.
Yeah, it's true because sometimes I'll listen to like
great on delivery.
I'll listen to my set. I record all of my sets, right?
Yeah.
And I'll listen to it, and every now and then I'm like, if this is all anyone was hearing, would they get the joke?
Yeah.
No, they would not.
Yeah.
And so then I have to really like try and fine tune what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, there's we recently did an album, Beth Stelling's Simply the Beth, who's an amazing, freaking amazing comedian. And she was very much in the same tone, whereas like there's not a wasted second, and it's not doesn't necessarily feel frantic, but there's like just everything serves a purpose within the comedy, and I felt like that's kind of like what was with
so
Jim.
Well organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, full.
Yeah, you can't just talk like some people will just if I talk really really fast, people will think that I'm funny and blah blah blah, but that's not true.
Yeah. Now, what was your first experience with Jim Gaffigan?
Would you believe tonight?
But hey, you know, there's a first time for everyone.
Yeah.
So excellent.
So yeah, that's pretty much it tonight.
Wait, that was your first time, Miguel?
Yeah.
I'm a very bad comedian. Hold on. He's worse than me. He didn't even know his name.
Yeah. I'm a very bad comedian.
So
yeah.
So happy I was here to experience your first time.
I never thought I'd hear a woman say that.
I'm always somebody's first, honey.
There's that
So we kind of touched on this, but like he works clean in his set. Like there's not any obviously blue material, but there's a lot of dark themes in there. Mm-hmm. Like you know, Ronald McDonald, the 70s pedophile clown. A lot of cynicism, a lot of...
He references suicide a lot.
Suicide,
yeah.
Cancer.
Self-issues, self-worth
issues. Well,
even
that, no, that's
the long-sleeve sun shirt.
So do you feel
I can relate
that
to the long-sleeve
sun shirt. His cheery tone, like even that secondary voice and some of the... Because he uses voices a lot.
Yes,
accents.
He does.
Not just that one, like accents and just funny voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The New Yorker, the salesman voice, that New York...
Selling everything.
Yeah. Why don't you come in here and you can pay me to use a machine that, you know, instead of buying at home, you know.
Like that stairs, they don't go anywhere. People just use them.
Yeah. So it's, he sort of, it almost feels like he's stealthing in these concepts mm-hmm. through this silliness. Is that something that you think is...
Well, people relate to some sort of stereotypical voice that has that mm-hmm. connotation.
If we're dissecting him, I feel like... It's definitely useful in his style because it's kind of like maybe I don't need as much again because we're listening to it, right? I don't need as much actions or whatever stage presence, even though he has it still. But the way he's doing the accents is so adding to the joke.
Well, it's like Mama Domino's, and it's not just like and other Italian stereotypes. Like it's just that's a terrible Italian accent.
Yeah.
But
and other puns.
But yeah, like he's deconstructing the jokes within the jokes too, which is
if I were to use
so
a publishing
meta.
Metaphor. The jokes are the main text of the story, but then you have graphics that might visually illustrate it or a picture that'll visually illustrate it. And that's what those voices are. That's what those imitations are. Those are the ones that really catch your attention because they're the picture. They don't necessarily take over the whole story, but they will tell you this. They will tell you a story just by themselves.
Yeah. One of the moments that I really loved is actually occurred fairly early on mm-hmm. and it was one of those like really like doubling down on the darkness was the bit about the using of Sarah McLachlan song.
Ooh,
and then the dogs like whoa, so the dogs are like oh well, that's been heavy handed Sarah. and it's like aren't there still starving kids in Africa, and it's like where he's like just using that joke to just like mm-hmm. just like shade in like that voice to shade in the colors of that scene.
Just like throwing mad shade on middle class bougie white people who are like, oh my god, the poor animals.
Yeah. Now it's kind of interesting because I was looking at the structure because we have Disney, the first like it goes the Disney bits, gym mm-hmm. and bodybuilders, then McDonald's, hotel. And hotel pools.
He's sort of overweight in McDonald's before bodybuilding.
he loses
or he
fat.
Kept doing it.
Yeah.
Doing
he
that.
Yeah.
Well, basically, food and fat run throughout.
Yes. Yeah,
true. Right. Because, I mean, it's always defined as material. Like, his big breakout bit was the Hot Pocket thing.
Mm,
like,
Hot Pockets.
Like, 20 years ago on almost.
But, like, what is Disney?
These aren't skinny jeans.
I'm just...
Other than an amalgamation of...
Well, it kind of like looking at it, thinking about it, it almost breaks into like three like a three-act play kind of thing. Because the initial portion, like Disney in the gym, is about self-loathing.
Yes.
And bodybuilders. Mm-hmm. And even that is like...
And self-loathing.
Yeah, it's like...
But a lot of self-loathing.
Yeah, so that first act is about loathing of the self. The second act is...
Also like, loathing of the self. Sorry, go ahead.
McDonald's hotel pools, mm-hmm. and then it has the whales, which I think is kind of a hard transition point, mm-hmm. Which is about... culture is like a cultural delusionment, like mm-hmm. where he's talking about how, you know, they just enjoy the fucking McDonald's. They never pretended to be anything more than what they are.
Yeah,
just stop bellyaching and just enjoy it. But like, but also like in the hotel, like the shoes and the slippers and laziness and and like just creepiness, like people making out in the pool.
Common how can be
even something else being your version of McDonald's. Like maybe you're reading this magazine, that's your McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and the whale is a bit of a hard transition. It almost feels inserted. Right. But then the third portion...
Except for the sperm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sperm. I think it's just a pivot point where he's like, I gotta put in something funny here.
I gotta make whale noises at some point during this gig.
Gotta put that water in the Indian Ocean.
Ooh, my tummy hurts.
But the third point, so that's Domino's, Subway, and boner pills. Vitamins and boner pills.
Right.
Flintstones, vitamins, and Law Order.
Law Order. Yes. I'd eat the fuck out of Law Order.
Oh my god, give me a vitamins.
But that one really seems to be about excess and lack of control.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, in a lot of albums that we've listened to on the show, like, the most effective ones seem to have a thread.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's one here, but it's really subtle. It's not, like... Like, Ellen did...
Well, he starts it out, though, kind of. Sorry. He starts it out with excess and lack of control.
Yeah, that's
his
opener.
His opener is how he just had another kid. It's his fourth kid. What else is that other than excess and lack of control?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, the pilot to a sitcom is about how he won't get a vasectomy.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
He's afraid of it.
Yeah.
But no, it's interesting. It's like, it's there. There is definitely a structure and a thematic through line to his material in this special and the album that was recorded. But it's not as obvious as like maybe some other ones. Like Ellen's latest special, and actually her one prior to that as well that she did when her show was canceled in the 90s. It very much
Mad About You?
No, the Ellen Show. Mad About You is somebody else. What's her name? I can't remember.
What was the Ellen Show?
The Ellen Show.
Yeah, are you really ignoring the fact that we talked about vasectomy so quickly?
And Ellen's special, like
Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt.
Thank you.
So in Ellen's special, it very much is like it starts with a bit and then ends with this bit. It's a through line, a thematic through line. Carlin would do that a lot as well, where he'd like have a thematic through line to his material. Robin Williams at the Met was like that as well. So
lots of comedians.
Yeah. So for like a special, how important is it for like an hour for like an album or a set? Like as comedians, how important do you feel it is? And do you think he did it effectively in this album?
Yes, he definitely did it effectively. I think it's important to a point. I think it's really good if you're able to tie everything loosely together, but I have to stress loosely. I find when the common thread is too in your face, like it's too like you're being figuratively hit over the head with it, that it's just a little bit overbearing and I kind of lose interest.
I thought it flowed pretty well. Like, I didn't find the whale stuff to be hard inserted the way you did.
Yeah, thematically it was a hard pivot, but as a joke, it flowed fine.
Yeah, and because actually, in that sense, he pretty much reminds me of the way that I structure my sets. So, like, they come up with a theme, but you know, make sure the transition to the next theme works well, and then so on and so on. With, of course, occasional callbacks to previous jokes because, you know, they were so funny in the first place.
I just think it's a matter of opinion. I feel like, as a fan or the person that's getting entertained, as long as it's entertaining me, as long as it's funny, I don't really care where you go with it. If it
adds up together or it doesn't. If I'm laughing, it's satisfying.
But with the insertion of that whole whale bit, like, the themes are heavy, right? And so that whale thing was sort of the lighthearted send off into the horizon of, like, I'm going to leave this theater happy, right?
Yeah. Which I think was... whales are heavy.
Right? That's what I was going to say, because it kind of does go together.
Oh, it's a weighty subject.
He's like, a lady came up to me after the show and told me that whales aren't bad. They're actually got a lot of blubber. And then he went into the whole thing about
big bones and all that.
It was still a lighthearted thing, but then you're like, okay, well, there's still about the weight thing.
Like, it was swimming's not working,
clever.
Guys.
Whales
are swimming a lot, but it's not really a great exercise.
But I'm going to disagree with you. Like, I find disjointed sets, like jokes that are funny, but then they don't connect into other jokes. To me, it's just kind of random, and I might lose interest after a while.
Yeah.
Again, might be a difference of opinion, but that's me.
It's
okay. You can be wrong.
Okay. No, I want
everybody to say it right the first time.
I did this stuff. Both of you.
No, I was just gonna say, like, and as a new comedian that isn't obviously in a class where they speak to structure, like 101, right there.
True.
Like when I'll say this about you and I getting together after you heard my set, kind of thing, and like, I'm so glad that you paid the money and I didn't, because I got to get it for free.
You did.
But, you know,
a fan of that, a fan of getting it for free.
Like, I sort of went into this just sort of like, I'm gonna try it, but like zero research, and maybe I probably should have done that. And like, you obviously watch comedians, and there is a thread, there is a theme, and there is the callback and the structure, all of it. Like, mine was not that, and that's okay.
Yeah,
like,
of course it is.
Well, yeah.
Sure.
There's room for other, like, this is a style.
But,
there's other styles. Like, there's the one liner.
But it's kind of nice to, like, dissect a podcast, and, like, grateful for this podcast that you're doing, because then you get to analyze, and you're like, that is something that I'd like to work towards. And it makes you think about what you're putting in to your set, because you have people listening to it, and you want to put this through, right? And so it's just like... Wow, the job is a lot bigger than it looks.
But like at least not having taken a class makes you so much cooler than the rest of us.
And that hat? Oh my God.
My God, the hat.
I wish I could see the hat.
She's wearing a hat.
I mean, it is several different shades of neon. Okay, no, that's not true.
No,
you
know it's what? Not.
But it's like, if we're really great
that's
in this
hat,
now, it comes through a lot of different things. Like, we're judging it as comedians, so that's one thing. So we'll have our own style, our own opinion. But then there's the common person that is kind of like, hey, yeah, I'll pay $120 for this guy live. That's funny.
You know what I mean, right?
The peasants, like, yes.
The person that wants to entertain.
We shall call the peasants.
The peasants.
As long as you get to throw things for them from the balcony.
But like, to them, I feel like if you like look in their perspective, I don't think they're looking at it that deeply, right?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's like...
That's
it's
the craft.
What makes good storytelling. You know, it's the craft. It's like, they're not necessarily looking at that, but that's... how you get your message through, and you keep them entertained.
Yeah.
Even the craft, though, like, what is the craft? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get that it's not flowing, but what is the purpose of the craft? Is it to flow? Is it not to flow?
Or
is
it to keep people
have them laughing? Exactly.
And I mean, and there's different ways of doing it.
Agreed.
Like, you know, this.
But
you compare him to, I don't know.
You could compare it to anybody. But I feel like the end goal is...
Anyway. Jeselnik, Hedberg.
Yeah.
Mitch Hedberg.
There we go. One liner.
There's complete opposite spectral difference.
Jeselnik and Hedberg.
To compare them, though, at the end of the day, the deciding factor whether it was good or not would be if the people that are watching or listening to it were entertained,
right? Of course.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I like Richard Wright, but, you know, that's...
But
or
for
Stephen
those
Wright,
that are looking for
like
that
Stephen
extra,
Wright, who's again,
I hear you.
That like like dry one-liner, monotonal. Because, you know, I grew up in the '80s, and that was like what was against the brick wall at the comedy, whatever. And so, I mean, I loved it, but at the same time, it's like it's a different type of meal. You know, like with a one-liner getting like an amuse-bouche of jokes.
Yeah,
exactly. And so, like, I can appreciate the craft of a comedian who, like, so there are certain. I'm not super partial to the one-liners. Let's be real, but I find Jeselnik and Hedberg fucking hilarious. Obviously, because they're amazing and they're really good at what they do. just because it's not my favorite kind of comedy doesn't mean that it's not good or I can't appreciate the work that they put into it and their craft.
That's the best way to put it. Yeah, and this is very joke heavy. Like, so it's storytelling, but it's not a storytelling comedy.
No,
it's a lot of punches.
It's a lot of punches.
Joke. Yeah, and even when he's not doing like a setup, like a, you know, okay, here's the setup, here's the punchline. He's doing a pun or doing something, a dad joke to sort of like just keep the energy going. So, I mean, you compare him to, say, like somebody like, I don't know, Patton Oswalt.
I love Patton Oswalt as well.
But it's a very different pacing too. Which I find incredibly different. So again, and also addressing similar themes, similar kind of ideas, but it's interesting you have these different methods to get to the same place.
I respect him even more as a writer though, for his ability to just keep going joke, accent, joke, like just pow. It's like a whole bunch of flurries, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It never
McFlurries.
But it doesn't feel overwhelming. Like there's sometimes when people just raise the roof, guys. Yes. But yeah, sometimes it just feels like it's overwhelming. Like he still paces it in a way that it feels like you have time to let the jokes sink in.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of subtle stuff in there too. Yeah. I feel like he actually serves all kinds of flavors. Like if you just want it in your face, he's got the obvious stuff. But if you want like some of the subtle secret stuff,
Speaking of the obvious stuff in your face.
Yeah.
Sunny.
I actually thought Miguel was gonna say something. I kinda set him up there, but
I've had at least two more years of Miguel.
Sometimes it's too easy. Sometimes it's easier than me.
That's me.
Oh my god, he's so good at puns. He's so good at puns.
So good at puns.
Now, for me, I tend to be a storyteller. People who know me can attest to this. That I like telling stories. So hearing a story with punchline after punchline, that's what I aspire to when I write. That said, I'm a big fan of Anthony Jeselnik, but at the same time, that's kind of what I aspire to, like to be able to tell a story that's funny throughout.
Yeah. And a lot of this, like speaking of like funny throughout, is pretty timeless. Like this is 2012, which explains this one element of the subway content.
That was the only thing that kind of stuck out.
And I mean, that's
that
like
timeless.
Those circumstances hadn't arisen,
it still would have been timeless.
It would have been fine. It's like, you know, us as a modern audience knowing the Jared situation.
The entire time watching this is like, I watched it last night for the first time in a real, like, okay, I'd seen it before, but I did not remember it accurately. And so I rewatched it last night. And the entire time he was doing that subway bit, I kept waiting for him to drop, like, the pedo bomb.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And I was like, wait, what? Why is this not happening? Because it just seemed so relevant. Like, it seemed current.
But it's like 5 years too early.
Exactly.
So it's like, if that hadn't happened,
You wouldn't have been able to tell.
Something beyond his control.
Yeah, whereas Ronald McDonald being a pedophile clown, that was true in the 70s, that's true today, and that'll be true in 2964.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just, this is just the way it is.
He's a creepy, creepy clown.
I mean, clowns are evil.
I have many friends who are clowns.
I don't mind clowns. I think clowns are clowns. That's all I'm saying. Clowns are clowns.
I've had nightmares.
I think some commercial clowns are creepy. To all of my friends in the clowning community, I respect your art and craft. And
I also respect yours to my friends. I think you're in comedy.
Now, of course,
you're a bit
something
of a clown.
I do want to do one day is, of course, stand at the corner of Young and Dundas at 3 a.m. dressed as a clown. Nothing else.
I have to say, like, the Law and Order vitamins was hilarious.
Oh my god.
True.
I would eat the shit out of a Sam Waterson vitamin.
Yeah.
You'd be so healthy.
Yeah. Full of righteous indignation.
Yeah. And you know what? If you don't eat those vitamins, you feel guilty.
Oh.
He's so good.
Actually, I did buy myself gummy vitamins the other month and I ate them for like a solid 3 weeks, like religiously, and then I forgot. And stopped, and they're sitting on top of my fridge, and I'm just remembering that. But you will eat gummies more often.
Yeah, because they're like candy.
Like a candy.
Yes, it's true.
But I mean, like, if they were, you know, like, maybe one was in the shape of Mandy Patinkin's face. Not Law and Order, you know. I would eat that.
Yeah, yeah. I find things anyway, sir.
Everyone loves a good juju.
Yeah.
Just piss
them
out.
Yeah.
But, so if you ever want green piss, yes. Eat a vitamin.
The thing is, the thing with that vitamin thing is that was just really a setup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like a 5-minute setup to the Extends pills.
Yeah,
you know he just wanted to end on a dick joke.
Yeah. I'm just in the gym right now, trying to waste an hour so I'm not eating.
But it was just to get him from point A to point B.
Which is funny because I thought the vitamins were funnier than the Extends.
But I mean, I think the.
I also don't have a penis.
It was funnier, but there was elements that were like the Jimmy Johnson and the Dick Butkus.
I didn't find that funny. Actually, that was one of my least favorite parts of the joke.
I
thought it came across as a bit obvious.
That's
where I feel like his accents failed a little bit. Because typically, if he threw in more accents there, I don't think he did, it would be a little bit more funnier.
A little more of a treat for the ears.
He's got an accent. Ha ha.
But I mean, really, like, all of that still was the setup to that last.
It's true. I was actually kind of disappointed by the extent. My least favorite part of his entire
But maybe you would have loved it in 2012.
Who knows?
How old was
I in 2012? Well, I was very immature in 2012,
We gotta like look at another thing that he does, right? I feel like his accents make his jokes a lot funnier, but there's certain jokes where it's like, is that laziness or is that the ingredient? Like, I mean, if he just said the joke, I don't think I'm laughing as much, but when he adds in the accent, I'm like, haha, that's funny. Is it funny? No, I think the accent's more funny than the actual joke. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
So it's like that's a great example of where he didn't do the accent. Mm-hmm. I guess we can listen.
But for me, like the capper was two things: was the phone mining. Which you don't get, but they still get
fucking love the phone mining.
Still get
so
the line.
Why do you guys love the phone miming? I want to know.
Because it's just funny.
I'm not even talking about a real phone right now.
Yeah.
Wait, is he like heightening and deconstructing at the same time?
Yeah, it was really funny.
So he does that a lot, though.
He constantly deconstructs.
That's all usually. I love that. Yeah. I feel like he engages you so much as the audience because he'll say a joke and then he'll almost mimic what you might be thinking, and I'm sure a lot of people might be thinking what he does next.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's great. It's like, oh my god, I was really thinking what he's talking about.
Yeah. So it's a very meta move on multiple layers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have like the talking on the phone bit is a timeless bit that goes back to like one of the first comedy albums. Like goes back to like, you know, if you go to Bob Newhart,
one of the first
comedy albums ever structured around him talking on the phone to Abe Lincoln was one of the key bits. In fact, it's like it's the bit that they use as an example of somebody ripping it off in The Amazing Mrs. Maisel.
This was, of course, before the Revolutionary Soldiers stormed the phone company. Right before they stormed the airports.
Yeah. But that is a Trump joke for those in 2949 listening to a podcast.
Yeah, that was a Trump joke.
Yeah. So, like, it's a stale bit, but he heightens it in some really fun ways.
It wasn't stale. He did not perform it. It was
like as a bit. It's
it's a stale bit, but if you don't do it anyway, because of the way he's doing it. It's so good.
And it's just
I was surprised at how funny it was.
He dragged it out for just the right amount of time. And then
can we repeat that? What are we talking about right now?
So the phone bit.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And then he ends with a callback.
What hotel are you in?
Which is like not even a call back to the start. It's a call back to
mid, like three quarters
of the show where he talks about
what room are you in? Oh, the kid and the woman, the old woman, and how it's like the cycle of life, and it's like because you kind of like start at one place and you end at one place, and it's like we're all at the one place.
Yeah, so it's like a very random callback.
Yeah.
But I mean, you think if you're like, okay, I'm gonna do a callback to one of these big moments, but it wasn't. It was a callback to a really random, which actually worked better, I found.
So,
contrary to what I was saying earlier, I feel like that would have been funnier if I watched it. Like maybe just the audio of it wasn't as funny.
Even though
you guys found it funny, I thought it was okay.
I'm going to agree with you on this because I didn't realize he was doing the whole phone mining thing. But once I heard that,
it
suddenly become really funny. Because Because this isn't a real phone, he said into his finger.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I mean, you could visualize it, but...
He's like breaking the fourth wall while breaking the fourth wall. Like, he's like, the audience are getting kind of bored now. I'm filming a special. You know, like, he's like, doubling down on the breaking of the fourth wall, which is like, it's just so bananas. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it works.
Is he telling a shoe joke right now? Oh, a sock joke? Is he really going to tell a sock joke?
And then he tells a sock joke.
And then he tells a sock joke.
Multiple.
Is he doing... Oh my god, he's doing that voice already.
When the elastic...
Yeah.
What?
A diarrhea joke?
Oh, the elastic goes
on. Oh, we might as
well. Good old geographic diarrhea joke.
But on that, the sock going missing and keeping the one sock, that's been recycled by everybody.
Yeah, but the thing is, the way he structures it and presents it, it feels fresh.
Yeah,
and I think that's really interesting.
Hearing about a sock retirement, that's not something...
Other jokes, like what part of it makes it funny?
I think the punch up of not so much the voice that he does, but like the inserting that metacriticism where he's using the concept of the through line for the audience is important. So often the comedian presents themselves as the through line, and that he's presenting it as a secondary character is kind of that's unique. And that he's doing this is like he's presenting himself as both the comedian and the voice of the comedian, which I find interesting. And I find it just it elevates it from something that is like, oh, this is.
And he does the same thing to project his opinion, like similar to what you might be thinking.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's like it's a really crafty way of steering the audience in a way.
Getting them involved without them being involved.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know what you're thinking right now.
It's a negative connotation, but like gaslighting. But it's kind of like he's gaslighting the audience. And
essentially, he is gaslighting the audience.
But in a good way, not a horrible human being way.
No.
Having had to deal with a gaslighter earlier this year, I prefer this kind of gaslighting because at least I'm laughing.
Exactly. So if I'm going to go sort of around the circle, but would you, Alicia, would you recommend this album to somebody who's like, never listened to him before, never heard of Jim Gaffigan, but you recommend this album?
Can we call Alicia the Hat?
The Hat? Just the Hat? Yeah, call her the Hat.
Alicia the Hat.
Sorry, Le Chapeau. Because remember, chapeau. Yes.
I definitely would. I mean, being someone that doesn't, is learning to actively look or watch and listen to all things comedy because of being at Second City, the people that I'm surrounding myself with and kind of discovering this new interest. Like, it's been really fun. And Jim Gaffigan was sort of the first, most recent, I guess. I don't know how I'm going to say that. But anyway, he's just a good starting place for listening. And if you don't know your preference, like, I mean, I used to really like Dane Cook, but now I go back and I'm just like,
we all have
you know what I mean?
Shame.
Right.
We all
laughed
at Dane Cook.
Yeah.
We all did it.
And like, there's some stuff that's super funny still, but like, he's a nice place to.
He's a place in history.
Jim Gaffigan, the not sleazeball Dane Cook.
Oh.
It's not shock factor. It's you still reflect on the way you live your life. There's a commentary. There's it's well crafted. It is a nice gift with a pretty bow, right?
Yeah.
And it's also kind to the ears, as opposed to like, oh god, like, you know, Bob Saget stuff. Like, whoa. I didn't accidentally.
I knew Bob Saget stuff before that. So
Bob Saget's
old enough to.
I know.
And that's a thing. Like, as I slowly start to listen to. I have unlimited data for my work phone, and so when we're driving, it's unlimited.
You stop.
No,
just hang your head in shape for like 1 second.
Share
not
data.
With that hat on.
But I drive Toronto to Windsor often, so we listen to a lot of comedy. And on Spotify, you are granted like the top 20 comedians or like what's popular, right? And there was Bob Saget as an option. And I was like, should we dabble?
Yeah, you should.
And Wes was like,
yeah.
And
like,
I was like,
I find him one of those people like.
But loved it.
I find him extra funny because I associate him with Full House. This like super clean,
See, I don't, like, you know, I don't, like, I grew up with MTV, I don't associate him with anything, and so when people are like, oh, Bob Saget, blah, 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 I was like,
and then it's like, what?
I'm gonna fucking go into that. It's intense. Before Full House, I knew of his material.
Really?
And yeah.
So it was like,
oh, they're casting him?
See,
it's like BoJack Horseman, you know? It's like,
I love BoJack Horseman.
That character is like, oh, that's a weird
character.
That
would be
interesting. No, it's Bob Saget. But yes.
It's like, well, it's very clearly modeled after Bob Saget. It's like, yeah.
But yes, I would recommend Jim Gaffigan. I think he's a treat to the ears. And
excellent.
Funny.
I would recommend BoJack Horseman.
What's the question, by the way?
Would you recommend this album?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, fuck yeah, bud. Gonna go back right there to my Kingston roots. Listen to the goddamn album, you'll like it. It'll be funny. If you don't laugh, then you're a dick, okay?
If you don't like it, you're tragically hip. I'm sorry, we're doing the Kingston stuff.
Dude, I will put you in the pen!
Oh, penitentiary.
What's the problem?
Yeah, we're a couple of beers deep.
Well, I mean, like, there's like nine of them, so.
Yeah.
They anyway. You have your pick. Except for the women's prison, which is closed.
Yes.
Would I recommend it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I feel like, at the very least, you get to hear a different style. At the max, you get to really appreciate the work that he's put into his performance. I mean, like, the way he's writing it, the way he's performing it, just all of it added up together, it's something that you could definitely take away and be like, you know what, that's pretty talented. Maybe it's not the jokes that I would have told, but the way that he delivered it is fantastic. And
you could feel good about it when your kids are in the room.
It's almost like you can't lose listening to it. There will be definitely something that you learn from it, whether you learn from it. Even if you're not trying to learn from it, even just listening to it to just laugh, it's pretty funny. It's got his jokes, you know? You can relate to it one way or another. But if you're trying to take something away from it, it definitely has something to teach.
And if you're listening to it in the car, and your wife happens to be in the car, you're not going to end up sleeping on the couch and for the next
day. Yeah, why not? It's like, he said it. He said it, but it's true.
Yeah. And he said it cleanly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cleanly.
Okay. Well, I'm an editor, so I'm going to be as concise as possible on this. So I'm going to be a Yelp review. 9 out of 10. Good stories. Good jokes. Would laugh again.
Oh.
9 out of 10? Whoa.
I definitely recommend this to you. Mm-hmm. One thing I'd actually also recommend is a sitcom, which is like,
so funny.
It's so subversive.
I might look at it just because you suggested it right now.
Yeah. Because like you have this image of Jim Gaffigan. And
what's the image that you have?
Well, I mean, I don't now because I'm not familiar with his work, but like going, like, you know, several years ago after his first couple of albums, I'm like, oh, you know, clean cut, humor, family friendly, funny, but, you know, it's just they're, you know, but then you like, you know, listen more deeply to this material or you watch his show where it's like, oh, he's like a really lapsed Catholic.
Here's my opinion, and I'm gonna mention Alicia because I feel like she kind of said it before. Did I mispronounce anything?
No, you're good.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Because
you said you kind of mentioned that it's a good starting point, and I feel like
it was a starting point for me personally. Actually.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
I feel like even as a suggestion, I think it's a great starting point.
Yeah. I mean, this album is good jumping on. It's not like you have to like listen to like three albums before like, to get a vibe
right.
for it.
Yeah.
Like, there's some comedians who's like, okay, we'll start with this album, ignore this album.
You won't get this.
It's like, this is his style.
This is
like
a good standalone album.
Moving to the next album, this is what you're getting.
Each of his albums and each of his specials.
Like hotel jokes.
Jokes. They stand on their own.
Yeah.
Each of these. So, yeah. So like
this album stands on its own. You don't need to know anything about him.
Yeah.
To actually find it funny.
Yeah. And I think the sitcom may be
more family kids oriented. Like,
oh,
he's
God,
talking about them more.
No, I mean, like, he's not.
This is not
He's talking about them more. He's involving,
just, like,
there's more jokes involved with them, right? Like, right now, he only mentioned having four kids.
Okay, in the opening episode, the David Tell character, who's not David Tell, but an amazing comedian in his own right, Adam Goldberg, and Michael Ian Black, who's playing the gay real estate agent, best friend of his wife, Jeannie, are watching their kids in the park. I just rewatched the pilot last night.
This was part of the homework.
No, it wasn't. I just did this to like just refresh myself. They're standing in a park. The real estate agent can't find the kids anywhere. There's just too many goddamn children.
Too many kids.
Like, they shouldn't breed. This is ridiculous and out of control. The Dave Attell character is standing outside the park going, getting a cop walks up to him and goes, do you have any children here, sir? And he's like, oh, God, no. And what do you do? What are you doing here then? I'm just watching these children. I think you're going to need to come with me. And he's like, oh, no, my God. And he's like, so it's like, that's how it wraps. And so it's like this show is, it's like, that's a thing.
Yeah, to clarify, just so I'm not like misunderstood, what I meant was there would be more material about the kids and family
than he had in this episode.
Yeah, but he also does like weird stuff, like an episode where it's addressing his food addictions, where he has like a love affair with a cake, a red velvet cake, and like what's it? You know, Black Velvet is playing.
Everyone's got a face like, don't we all?
Every time it cuts to this cake,
the song Black Velvet. So it was just such a weird Canadian reference for an American Canadian comic.
But being
a premise,
is he still a fairly religious man?
Yes and no. I mean, he's a laugh Catholic. Like, he joked about it with Stephen Colbert when he was on there about, like, how he's not a very good Catholic, and if he took a Catholic test, he failed a Catholic test.
Right.
So he...
But he did open for the Pope.
He opened for the Pope.
Like, that's pretty incredible. But I think that's, like, such power.
And to Pope Francis's credit, I mean, like, when has a Pope ever had a stand-up open for
him? Sure. But I think that's the coolest thing about Jim Gaffigan is he is so family-friendly, yet he does have such a subversive, you know, theme throughout, and he's literally in the homes of a lot of these American people that can totally relate to that, he's talking about in sort
Mommy,
of a negative
Daddy,
light.
Well, what is suicide?
And then
if you're the Pope after the Nazi youth Pope, then you're kind of just going to win regardless.
Even the bit that he has... Sorry.
I'm done.
No,
cool.
Actually, I was just going to say the previous Pope being, a zombie incarnate.
That's all good. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the previous, Nazi youth Pope.
Yeah,
my reference to him is, living zombie Pope. That's what he looked like.
And Sonny.
I was just going to say that he does bring in what's going on so everybody could kind of relate to it. Not just the heavy, not just the I'm super fit at the gym, but... Even like, what are we doing with all these pictures? Like, I thought that whole bit was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm taking pictures of everybody. Like,
I take more pictures of my kids.
More pictures than his father ever
looked at him. Yeah.
Which is, that's a layer because A, that's a lot of pictures, but B, it's like, his father didn't love him.
Or pay attention to him, or he never got that affection.
Wait a second.
100%, man. You know what's crazy?
Oh my God, I want to cry now.
We kind of go into a deeper thing when we say that, because I feel like comedy for a lot of writers is a therapy. And you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I feel like he's totally expressing it there. It's like, what the fuck? Like, this guy didn't even look at me. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay.
That stood out for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so
agreed.
If people want to find you all on social media, they'll work their way around again. Alicia?
Literally the @ Alicia Carrick. Alicia Carrick.
Excellent. Liz?
The @ L-I-Z-Z-Z. That's 3 Z's. L-I-Z-Z-Z-A-R-U-S.
Lizarus.
Do I really have to say the @ 2019,
you
guys?
2019.
What's your handle? What's
Twitter,
your handle?
I call myself a dinosaur. Come on.
S-B, my initial, Sunny B, S-B, the critic. @ Twitter, so just find me on Twitter.
You might need
there.
To spell
it.
Really?
For me, look,
Sierra Bravo, the critic. I'm not gonna spell it. It's spelled the way it sounds.
Yeah.
Google
it. Is it
guys.
Critic or critique?
Critic.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
For me, Max Supernova, all one word, all lowercase on Instagram.
Wait, say it again.
Max Supernova.
Max Supernova. Oh, shit.
Dang.
Are you not
I am
going to
follow you.
Okay, well,
Max
thank you, everybody,
Supernova.
For joining us today. And
thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you so
big shout out to Debbie, too.
Thank you, Debbie.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.